94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario. And today I am speaking with Ruben Santiago, an inductee to the Great Eight Hall of Change. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up and, where?
I grew up in New London, Connecticut. I'm originally from Minnesota, but I've been in New London, Connecticut since the age of four.
Okay. How was it growing up in New London?
This is around the time of the crack era. So it was different. I actually seen so many people, so many families destroyed, the tidal wave of the crack era, just destroy households, aunts, cousins, brothers, sisters. So yeah, where I grew up at in Crystal Avenue was very family structured though. Like, they say the saying, it takes a village. So that was my family structure there in Crystal Avenue. It takes a village, and a lot of, if your mother wasn't home, your neighbor fed you, they watched over you while your parents were at work. So it was that structure.
Did you live with your mom and dad or single parent?
I was in a foster home. I've been in 12 foster homes my whole life.
Wow.
So when I was staying on Crystal Avenue, I went to a foster home when I was seven. My last foster home I was in, and the woman actually ended up adopting me, my mother, Mary Johnson.
Wow. How was that going through the system for you?
Going through the system was traumatizing as a little kid, because I went to me and my brothers and sister. We went to some families that didn't want us, some families that were prejudiced, that didn't like black kids, So we went to some white families that, the last foster home I went to before Ms. Johnson, we went to a white family, and they used to lock us in a room all day. We wasn't allowed to talk to their kids or play with their children. We wasn't allowed to eat with them when they ate at the dinner table. So yeah, it was rough. It was definitely rough.
But you found a mom that showed you love.
Yes.
Do you feel like it was a little bit too late or just in the nick of time?
Oh, it was in the nick of time, because the last foster home that I was in before her, it was depressing as, a seven-year-old. I didn't feel loved. I didn't feel wanted. So Ms. Johnson, she definitely, she embraced us as her own two sons. And she had a conversation when I was 13, as in, hey, I want you guys to live with me forever. By this time, my mother was well off into her addiction. So we, came to the finalization she wasn't coming back to get us. And even though she lived in New London, she lived in the same town, her and my father. So she's like, hey, I want you guys to be my son to have my last name. So she adopted us. She adopted me and my brother when I was 13 years old.
Wow. Can you express the feelings you had on that day? Because I know it's a big proceeding. You have to go and you have to sign papers and go in front of the judge.
Yeah.
Do you remember that day?
Yeah. So I remember the night. So I'm going to go back just a little bit. I'm going to go back a little bit when I was 9 years old. The state allowed my father to take me, because we all had different, I got four siblings, but we all had different fathers. My father was well off. My father owned property out here. My father worked for Electric Boat EB, had money in the bank. And they were like, you can have your son. We'll give your son to you. So I remember coming home from school, packing my bags, waiting outside my projects. It was about 3:30. About 6:30 came. I was sitting on the bench outside of my projects. Miss Mary, Miss Johnson, was looking at. We lived on the fifth floor. She was looking out the window, And she's like, hey, Ruben, come upstairs. Just come upstairs and wait for him. Because it started to rain. So I'm like, hey, mommy, just give me one more hour. He's coming. He'll be here. My father never showed up. And again, like I said, we lived on the fifth floor. Me walking up them steps, we had an elevator, but I walked upstairs. I'm 9 years old. I got all these heavy bags with me because I packed my clothes. And I cried all the way upstairs until I got to my door and I wiped my tears because I didn't want my mom to see that I was hurt and that I was crying. But as I was walking upstairs, I promised myself at 9 years old that I would never in life let my children feel this pain that I felt on that day. So moving forward, when the night before we were adopted to go sign the papers, we had to pick out a new, do you want a new name? Now, I had such, I don't want to say hate, I had such dislike for my father. Me and him had the same name and last name. I wanted to change my name because I wanted nothing to do with him. So I had changed my name to Curtis Johnson. So we got to go through all these names and they're like, oh, you know what? I want my name to be Curtis. I changed my whole name, Curtis Lamont Johnson. So yeah, so it was, you know, I remember going to school, telling all my friends my new name, which was hard because, you know, I got like childhood friends and they were like, your name is, we got to call you Curtis now. What about Ruben? And I'm like, I don't want to be called Ruben anymore. Well, but as we talk further, I'll tell you how my name is Ruben now, but go ahead.
No, please, Chair, please continue. So how did you go back to Ruben?
So I went back to Ruben. I got incarcerated when I was 18. My father came to see me and he was like, hey, you know, I know me and you ain't on the best of terms, but your uncle died today. And it's only like 4 Santiago's left, but you're the youngest. You and your sister are the youngest. And, you know, I know this is about to ask you for a lot, but I want you to carry on the name. And, do you mind changing your name back? And I was like, you know, I really thought about it. My Santiago bloodline, it does mean a lot to me. It is my character. It is who I am. So I ended up changing my name back when I was incarcerated. So I changed it back to Ruben Sincere Johnson Santiago because I still had to pay homage to the woman who took care of me, who took me in as her own. So I still left Johnson in my name, you know, to show her honor that and love for a woman who took in a total stranger took me in as a total stranger as a kid and loved me unconditionally in every single way.
Wow. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. This is Ruben Santiago, Ruben Sincere, Johnson Santiago, doing his thing and sharing his story. Great 8 Hall of Change inductee. Now, tell me a little bit about Miss Mary Johnson. What type of woman was she? Or is she? I'm sorry.
She was a Christian woman. When we got dropped off, when my DCF worker dropped me off, to her, when our first introduction, she pulled in front of a church, 25 Black Hall Street in New London. She pulled up and said, hey, walk in that church, make a right. Your foster mother will be sitting right there. And I was like, I'm looking at my brother like, wait, what's going on? Like, all right. We walked into the church. Sure enough, we made a right. She stood up, introduced herself. And she's like, all right, you guys get on your knees. We're going to have an hour of prayer. So she was a very, a Pentecostal. So we grew up Pentecostal. So we were in church from Monday through Sunday. Saturday was choir rehearsal. So she brought us up in church and she loved us. You know, she loved us unconditionally. There was some battles at first because I was still looking for my mother, who lived in New London. I used to sneak to crack houses after school to find her and eventually end up finding her. And, my foster mother found out about it. And, she wasn't, I don't want to say that she tried to make me mentally detach myself from my biological mother, but she knew that if I kept pursuing, looking for the love as a child from my mother, well, with addiction, that I would just keep disappointing myself, keep reopening trauma. But so we went through some stuff that as a child I didn't understand, like, you know. And then my mother found out the church that we were going to, and she would come there, and they would you know, tell my mother to leave, you know, because she would come in intoxicated, she would come in high, and yeah, they would kick her out the church.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there something that you hear in the back of your head when you're facing tough times that Ms. Johnson used to say or tell you to do now that you're an adult making decisions?
She always used to implant it in me that don't ever forget about God. No matter what you do. When I turned 17, I didn't want to live with her no more. I didn't want to go to church no more. You know, I was being rebellious. I got tired of just going to church. I wanted to be cool like my friends and hang out and stuff like that. So I had moved out. I was still in high school. And she's like, no matter what you do, keep coming to church. Even if you come on just on Sunday, do not forget God, because he's not going to forget about you. So she embedded that in me, you know, to this day. And actually, the first time I was incarcerated, the first time I got arrested and I sat in the jail cell, those words rung in my head. Don't forget God. And I did. When I started getting in trouble, I forgot about him. I stopped going to church. And she always told me too, you ever get locked up, don't waste your first phone call on me, because I'm not coming to get you. And she stood by them words, because when I called her, she hung up on me.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah.
The streets
have and it made sense.
Huh?
I said, and it made sense.
It did. She invested in you. Yeah. What was the allure of the streets, or what was it about the streets that, I mean, it's popularity, quick money, it looks easy.
I'm going to be very transparent. I started selling drugs, not for money. I started selling drugs for love. I remember going to my father's house one day. I was 13 years old. No. I wasn't 13. I was 14 to visit him. And I remember seeing a crack pipe on the table. And I was like, okay, this is what he likes. So this is going to be the connection between me and my father. And I sold drugs to both of my parents to get love. I never did it for the money. My father worked at EB, Electric Boat. So from Monday to Thursday, I was Ruben. When he seen me, hey, Ruben, how you doing? But Friday to Sunday, my name was Son. How you doing, Son? Hey, this is my son. As soon as I came to the door, he cashed his check. And he had, like, you know, he would buy Chinese food. And we would sit for like an hour and chit-chat before we get our exchange. But he would have his little buddies over from work. And like, hey, man, this is my son, man. Don't he look like me, man? Yeah, he plays football, man. Yo, he's going to be, you know, going to be a woman killer, man. The women are going to love him. And I was the best son in the world, man, when I had crack cocaine. But Monday through Thursday, I was Ruben. Now, the reason I sold my mother drugs was because I didn't want my mother in the street selling her body. I didn't want her to ever get assaulted, you know, because the streets is wild, you know. So I wanted to, as a little boy, take as much pain from my mother that I seen her go through. You know, my mother, I came home from school when before we came up here. We came from Minnesota. No, we was living in Detroit, and I seen my mother get beat into a coma. I remember coming home from school, I was about 5 or 6, and it was a trail of blood. I'm talking about like globs of blood, not like, it was like thick blood. It looked like tomato paste. all over the house, and I was just screaming for my mother, and I found her in the bathtub of hot running water, unconscious. I ran next door, and I called, my neighbor called the ambulance. So my mother went through she went through like 2 years of a very bad domestic violence with my stepfather, my brother's dad. And I seen my mother turn from a beautiful woman until she felt like she was nothing. You know, my mother was like Halle Berry to me. My mother was like J-Lo to me. My mother was the most beautifulest woman. And she can sing. Like, my mother could have been on top of the charts, man. And I seen an individual break my mother down to nothing. So I didn't even sell drugs. I gave my mother drugs to just detach from reality, to ease her mind, to make her, you know, just escape her pain. Now, mind you, I'm 14, 15 years old, and this is the way I'm thinking as a child. You know, this is the way, like I said, I never sold drugs for money. I sold drugs for my parents to love me and to, you know, especially my father, especially my dad.
Searching for acceptance in life is very, very important, especially when you're young, and especially from parents. And, you know, we make our decisions. So you end up incarcerated. Yes. I always like to ask the question of, when was the light switch hit? You know, because sometimes you're incarcerated and all of a sudden you're like, you know what? I'm going to start acting and doing different.
Well, my first time I got incarcerated, it was for attempted murder. I was at a bar. First time, that's crazy, because it was the first time I was going to a club, and I ended up catching the attempted murder case. I ended up getting jumped by several people. It was a one-on-one fight, and I ended up getting jumped by like at least 15 to 20 people. And it turned into a big brawl. So the guy I was fighting, I ended up stabbing him 8 times, very badly. He actually lost his life on the operating table. They brought him back. So that was my first time incarcerated, and I didn't like it, you know, not like being, you know, it was 23-hour lockdown. So that, I thought I learned from it. I thought I learned from that. I came home in 2000, got married, met my daughter's mother, got married, tried to do the right thing. It was very hard working, you know, getting jobs because of my criminal history. You know, I'm putting on my, you know, I didn't lie on a lot of my applications. You know, I'm putting, you know, attempted murder, first degree assault. And, you know, there was, you know, I end up just going back to what I knew to do. And that was not even sell drugs. It was to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just on survival mode. It wasn't popularity. It wasn't to stack all this money. It was just to survive. Mm-hmm. So I end up, my brother had got shot. My brother got shot 5 times, and we were in retaliation mode. We were, you know, having a lot of shootouts for like weeks. And my house ended up getting raided. And they found 2 guns, an AR-15 and a shotgun and 2 bulletproof vests. The feds ended up picking up my case, and I ended up going into the federal custody. Wow. In 2004.
Wow. Yeah. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Ruben Sincere Johnson Santiago sharing his story. This is your second bid now. Is this where the turn happened, or you still needed
another? So the turn. So I finished my. I finished that. I came home in 2009. Turned my life around. You know, I was doing really good. Doing good. I met my wife in prison that I'm with now, Mia Soti Santiago, 9/11 survivor. Love of my life. I've been with my wife since 2000. I met her in 2008. through letters in jail. And we've been together ever since. So I'm home. I'm doing good. My son in 2011 got diagnosed with a brain tumor, with cancer. I was in the hospital room for about 3 weeks every day. Then my son's mother was like, hey, Ruben, you've been here too long. Why don't you go home, get some rest? You know, Ruben's okay. He'll be fine. In a couple of days, got a bit the port in his chest where we can bring him home, start his chemo. So I'm like, okay. I go home for 2 days. I get a call. Hey, Ruben flatlined today. You need to get up here. He was in New Haven. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm flying. I'm living in Westerly, Rhode Island at the time. I get to the end of my street. I get pulled over by several cops. Like, it was like a SWAT team. I was so scared. They took me to jail. They had me in a cell for 6 hours. Nobody knew where I'm at. They took my phone. My wife doesn't know where I am. My son's mother's calling me. They locked me up for a violation of probation. And it was so ridiculous. I'm, you know, begging these officers like, hey, my son is dying, man. Just give me a bond if I can get out of here and get to my son. I'll deal with my consequences later. Just let me get to New Haven. And they laughed at me like, oh, man, yeah, we heard every excuse. Come on, man, your son is dying, really? And I'm like literally bawling. So they finally let me make a call. One of the sergeants, they switched shifts. And the sergeant like, yeah. I said, man, give me 2 minutes. I just need to let my wife know where I am. So I call my wife. I'm like, babe, I'm locked up. She's like, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, they pulled me over. I think this is a violation. I don't even know where it came from. So fast forward, I call it my aha moment. That was Friday. They pulled me over. Monday, my wife came to see me. Now, mind you, I have no money. They took my money. They did so much just crazy stuff to me when I was in Rhode Island. I had no way of getting in contact with anybody. Monday morning comes, I see a sergeant. It's like 6 a.m. I'm like, hey, sir, listen, the last I knew, my son flatlined. I just want to call my wife and see my son is okay. They were like, okay, we'll give you a call. We'll call you. We'll go to your cell about 8:30. I'm like, okay, cool. I eat breakfast. I come back to my cell. They call me down. But we walk past the sergeant's office. So I'm like, hey, where are we going? We go to the chapel. Chaplain lady comes in. She's sitting there talking to me, praying for me. And I'm just like, you know, I'm still not catching on. Then I see my wife. The door opens. It's my wife. So I'm like, hey, you know, I'm happy to see her. I haven't seen my wife since Friday. I give her a big hug, but I could tell she was like disheveled. She had my T-shirt on, and I could tell she'd been crying. And my wife had to tell me, man, that my son passed away, man. My wife... And I lost it, man. I flipped every table in that visitor room. I destroyed it. And the COs let me do it. They let me have my moment. So that was my moment, as in, God, I'm tired. I can't do this no more. I'm done. I gotta do right. I'm done. This was the straw that broke the camel. Mm-hmm. So that was the moment. That was the moment that I turned it around. And that was June 21st, 2011.
Wow.
Yep.
So you have been inducted into the Grade A Hall of Change. You had to have been nominated. Do you know why you were nominated for and why they chose
so,
you?
Moving forward, I come home in 2012 for my violation. I had to do a year and a half. I started an organization called KOP, Keeping Kids Out of Prison. So I mentor kids. I also work for CT Bail Fund. Well, I was working for CT Bail Fund, where we bond people out of jail for absolutely free. And we help them with their cases. You know, if you got a domestic violence, you know, we help you sign up for anger management classes, things that they wouldn't do with white people. You know, it's like Monopoly in court. You know, we don't get the slaps on the wrist. We get jail time. So we help people with their cases. Like, hey, you know, what are you facing? Oh, they're trying to give me 3 years. Why? This is your first time ever being arrested. You should be getting the programs that everybody else is getting. You should be getting probation like everybody's getting. So I work for CT Bail Fund. I also work for Ledge Light Health District. I'm a peer navigator. I help people with opioid disease. They're coming from an incarcerated setting. We go into the jails. We go into the prisons like 2 to 3 weeks before they get out, you know, ask them for their needs. Hey, you need a phone? You need to get in contact with anybody? Do you need food? Do you need clothes, housing? So we navigate them back into society. It's a year program. But I've got, you know, I still got clients, participants that's been with me, you know, 4 years now, you know, and hey, you know, they give me updates on their life. Like, hey, Ruben, man, I just bought my first car. You know, these people in their 50s. I got my first apartment. You know, I finally got my license, you know, so it's, I love my job. So I also help my job. We bought a building and we turned it into community center / pantry. It's called The Place for Community Wellbeing. And our pantry is called The Bodega. So every Friday, I'm here now, actually. So every Friday, I run The Bodega. And I love it here, man. I love my pantry. So I've just been doing a lot of community work. I started in 2020 during the pandemic, feeding people from farmers to family from the pandemic. So from 2020 to 2023, God has allowed me to feed over, I say, about 500,000 people with 30-pound bags of food, boxes of food. So I've really been putting in the footwork. Not doing it for likes or pass on the back. I just do it for my heart and, you know, just to give back. I've taken so much from my community. I made it my responsibility to give back as much as I can.
Wow. Story of perseverance. If there's a young man out there right now that's making a tough decision, right? For whatever reasons, you know, for love and acceptance. What was your advice to that young man right now that's facing hardship?
Don't give up. And you can be whatever you want to be. You could be whatever you want to be. I'm a four-time felon. I can go into any jail and sign anyone out of prison without even a penny in my pocket because of the work that I've done, because of, you know, the companies that I work for. So you could be anything you want to be, even if, you know, even to the young men who coming home from incarceration who has an inmate number behind their name, that inmate number does not deter your future. You know, your future, that's just one chapter in your book. You know, you make, you know, the ending, you know, meaning it's up to your decision how your book is going to end. So, you know, we're going to go through, you know, you're going to go through things. You're going to make some mistakes. You're going to bump your head a couple times in life. You know, nobody's perfect, but don't let your mistakes, you know, be your ending. You know, get your life lessons. Let's learn from them and carry on. But you can be whatever you want to be. You know, I have several awards, you know, and I don't do it for the accolades, you know. People recognize me, you know. I got the 100 of Men of Color. I got 2 NAACP awards. I have a award from our mayor here in New London for my community service that I've done in my community. So I have a whole wall full of plaques and awards, but I'm just grateful for where I am today and you know, where I am today. I'm just so grateful. And just for having people that believed in me when I didn't believe in myself.
Your why has changed. You went from looking for acceptance to just giving unconditionally, like Miss Mary Johnson did for you.
Yes.
If she looks back at you now, what would Miss Mary Johnson say?
Well, she's still here.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Yeah. My mother's still. I'm sorry, I didn't put that in there. Yeah, my mother's still here. She's proud of me. I'm into church. I'm into ministry. So everything she taught us, you know, or at least one of her sons, is giving back to God, you know, and stayed on the path. So, you know, I've preached a couple times at my church called the church on 207 Bank Street. It's not there anymore, but I had a great peer mentor, pastor, friend, Angel Abar, that I had to, he taught me to unlearn so much stuff that I've learned in life, how to be a man, how to be a great husband, a great father. So I that's another thing too. As men, we got to have great role models, but we got to have male role models who hold us accountable, who don't let us just freestyle in life and think this is the right way. I had a man that held me accountable, like, hey, Ruben, nah, that's not right. What you're doing is not right. You got to do it this way. This is God's way. So I had some, you know, great men in my life, Ron Twitty, Darryl McGraw, Charlie Grady, another great, great, great mentor, Jared Jeter. I had some really, really great men in my life to hold me accountable, hold me responsible in every aspect.
Wow. Thank you so much for your time. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. These were the words of Ruben Sincere Johnson Santiago. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And like always, to everyone out there that's listening, thank you for listening and your time.
Yes, thank you.